Hi guys. We're your new neighbors. I'm Chris.
JC just moved in.
We just wanted to say hi. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Well, that's mighty neighborly of you. We really do appreciate it. I'm Brian, and this is Will.
Hey.
And we're just gonna ask you the question we ask of all our new neighbors. We've moved around a lot and been to several neighborhoods, and just want to know if you've accepted the goat-legged one as your all-powerful master and savior.
You know, we were going to have goatists living next to us.
Barbecue, eh? I'll prep the virgins.
That fucking real estate agent.
This means war. Reviewing Neighbors. I don't know what the fuck just happened.
Yeah.
We are reviewing the new film, not the 1981 film with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. That is a very different animal.
Well, they couldn't remake that if they wanted to, because both those guys are dead.
Plus, it would be weird if we just all out of a sudden reviewed old movies.
And Dan Aykroyd's not dead.
Have you seen Ghostbusters 2? Have you seen Crossroads? That motherfucker is dead to me.
Okay, fair enough. But he does make some good vodka.
That's true.
Mm.
Drink from a skull.
This is the latest film from the Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen team. You know, all their movies have a similar tone, I would say. And this is no different. Here, Seth Rogen plays Mac, married to unbelievably to Rose Byrne.
Yeah, it's like television in the late 90s.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Every
he even
single
calls
sitcom.
Himself the Kevin James, and it's like, yeah, that's about right.
That's absolutely
which
true.
Is as much as Kevin James should appear in any movie, is just in these like Beetlejuice-like references.
And they're that couple who are like, haven't really come to terms with the fact yet that their glory days of partying in college are totally behind them. They think of themselves as cool, but they've just had a baby, and they're kind of starting to philosophically adjust to that new life they're entering when a frat house moves in next door.
What?
Led by a stack of abs.
With Zac Efron's head on top
with
of
Zac
it.
With Zac Efron's head on top.
It's crazy,
oh,
man.
Oh, he's glorious.
Good grade cheese. And I was thinking about doing that throughout the whole movie because I'm a fatty and he looks like that.
No, it's funny. When you were walking out of the movie, Brian, you go, man, fucking product placement. Now I want Taco Bell.
That's all I would like.
And we walk away. It's like, yeah, and he also wants a lot of cock in his mouth, too.
There's a lot
of subliminal cock in the mouth in this movie.
I'm just saying, it's
literal.
It speaks a lot to my nature that I'm seeing all these dudes who are ridiculously cut, who are shirtless throughout most of the movie, and the one thing I think about walking out of the movie is, man, I really want Taco Bell.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a visual cue. It was one joke.
That's why it's subliminal. Otherwise, it would be super liminal. Come on, JC.
It doesn't take much for Brian to go, that's not fair, and it's not my fault, and I'm going to go get a giant bag of Taco Bell.
Yep. Fuck diets.
I blame neighbors.
I blame the schools mostly, but, you know, anyway, we're here to talk about this movie.
They were like, okay, we got a baby. We're going to try and not be cool. We're the cool adults. And we'll be like, hey, guys, hey, dudes, what if you, like, keep it down, yo? And, you know, the frat house, they're trying like, okay, well, they're like, we obviously can't keep it down, but so much. We're a frat house, but, you know, we don't want to piss these guys off either. Let's try to be friends with them. Things don't work out. And before you know it, it does indeed mean war.
Yeah, it's a fantasy world where frat houses can just pop up any goddamn where they want, and the neighbors are totally cool with it.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing for me in this movie to get past, and I know that sounds weird, that suspending my disbelief in a film that basically is channeling Animal House is hard for me to get past that, but right off the bat, they're like, how do we get rid of these guys? It's like, you guys already have 7 or 8 legal recourses to get rid of them as it is.
And the thing is, none of the other neighbors have problems with them. I know there's a montage of like, oh, they're doing nice things and stuff, but it's like, literally, none of these like fireworks or noise complaints or anything apply to anyone else.
Yeah, if you help somebody with their trash can, you automatically ignore weeks worth of partying.
Every night throwing giant, well, the adults called a rave, but I don't think that applies anymore.
The adults?
Yeah. I'm siding with the frats, okay? I hashtag go frat.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Can frats even like just pick up and buy any house they want? Or
I don't know.
Usually have to be on
in Obama's America, they can.
They can't afford to fix. One of my favorite lines is like, we can't afford to fix this. We're going to have to move. And I'm like, how do you think moving works? What do you think they're going to ask for when you buy a new house? Like, photos of your abs as payment? No.
That's the thing, too. I was like, wait, you can't afford to fix it. You didn't... So you must have bought the house because nobody rents to a frat.
Yeah. By the way, this is the most get-off-my-lawn we've ever sounded on a review.
I think we're just, like, tearing apart the logic. Of fucking Neighbors.
You don't like Seth Rogen, but in this movie, but not as cool.
That's my Seth Rogen.
It's a terrible Rose Byrne.
You know that Australian accent's really
it throws me for a loop.
Sexy when Brian does it.
G'day.
You know, I guess this is one of those movies that kind of built and finally kind of reached me, because at first I was kind of like, I'm just getting too old for these things, quite frankly, you know? It's like,
movies? We've seen, moving pictures?
No, these type of affairs where it's, right. You know...
Let's improv for 90 minutes and then maybe have an ending.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of that sort of retreading old type bits. As we were saying earlier, they even do the, you know, the ever since There's Something About Mary, de rigueur, oh, here's the bodily fluid scene we've got to do to everyone, make everyone be grossed out and laugh at the same time. I just don't find those scenes funny because they're so mechanical now, you know?
That guy's cock was mechanical?
No. I don't know what bodily fluid scene you were talking about.
It was called The Choker, I believe.
Yeah. I didn't see any fluids.
There's a lot of that, yeah, but I'm grateful in that there was a lot of good written comedy here, too. There are a lot of lines that were really funny. The physical stuff is funny, as it is in every Goldberg-Rogan movie, but yeah, I think there was, and I was sitting next to Brian, there was a lot of various lines of dialogue that we were just laughing at, because it was just pretty well written.
Yeah, I mean, there is some good dialogue when you find it. One of the things that really bothered me, though, is like, you know those trailers you've been seeing for weeks?
Yeah.
There's a montage in this movie that's just the trailer. Like, they rush through it so fast that they cram all these jokes into a 30-second period exactly in the same order as it appears in the trailer that I'm just like... And it's where the war first starts between these two houses. And it's in Fair Verona where we lay our scene, apparently, because it's a war between two houses. But I call a pox...
Oh my god, now I get it!
I call a pox on this editor for, like, just rushing... Like, as soon as it's like, okay, now it's on, and it's just like... Zip, the entire first act is over. And I'm like, could you spread that shit out a little bit?
Flip side, devil's advocate. We're watching an Apatow-like movie, not officially produced by Judd Apatow, that has the good sense to run under 100 minutes instead of over 2 hours.
There you go.
I was about to say, like, it's got a 97-minute runtime. I don't necessarily know that I want it to be any longer, even though I kind of enjoy it.
And I'm sure when it comes out on Blu-ray, you'll have the option of watching an hour of deleted scenes of them improving various versions of the scenes we just saw.
The abstended cut.
Oh, see... Now that's almost certainly what they're going to call it.
Yeah. You're welcome, Hollywood.
I'm going to refuse to watch it. I'm going to practice abstinence.
Oh, goodness. I have to abdicate my throne as the pun master.
Yeah. There's even a scene where he keeps having his own little pun off with his wife.
Yeah, my favorite scene in the movie.
And breaking the cardinal rule of punning, making puns about farm animals. That's the rule. You can't.
What?
Yeah, you can't.
I am aware of no such rules, sir.
Chicken puns, they are absolutely
puns the size of your head.
Yeah, what?
Well, cry foul if you must, but I am not aware of any barnyard rules against punning.
Hey, you keep down over there.
No, Goss, we are fighting now. We are in a fight.
I kind of like that. It's sort of an 80s snobs versus slobs movie, except that the snobs aren't that snobby. They're just in denial about how they used to be slobs, too.
Yeah.
Like, I like how reluctant they are to accept, like, parenting and actual adult responsibility, where it's like, at first they hang out and party with them, and then they realize, oh, we can't do this every night. And then similarly, Zac Efron has the kind of arc of just, like, trying to come to terms with his own pending graduation from college.
Yeah, they do a good job of adding those moments in, so it's like the grass is always greener as opposed to just drawing them one-dimensionally and making them hate each other.
Yeah, they each do... Each side does asshole-ish things, but no one is particularly the villain or an asshole. Yeah. They're just kind of inconsiderate and petty.
It's a shallow depth that both sides are given, but there's a lot of strength to this movie in just how powerful... the comic performances are here.
Yeah.
Everyone is giving it their all here. And, you know, who really knew that Zac Efron was going to have as much range as he actually has? I mean, he's actually pretty fucking talented as an actor, and he's funny as shit in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, especially towards the end when everything gets to, like, you know, I mean, it's just, like, all-out war, full-on combat, and he is so fucking funny. Him and Seth Rogen have a scene that I imagine they had to shoot many, many, many times because they would have had to have kept breaking up laughing during
yeah.
it. You know, and that's where the film finally grabbed me, where I went, okay, I gotta admit, overall, I think I really did enjoy this much more than I did.
Yeah, I think him and Rogen both make good foils, and on each side, I feel like him and Rose Byrne get along great, and Rose Byrne, I just think, is finally coming into her own as a comedic actress. We usually see her in dramas and horror movies. And on the flip side, I think Dave Franco has always been a pretty good supporting player, and here there are just scenes of him riffing with Zac Efron that I found hysterical.
Yeah, and I'm always a fan of a woman who, with the most adorable smile possible, can say the filthiest things.
Right.
And she pulls that off so well.
Yeah,
with an Australian accent.
With an Australian accent to boot.
We're still talking about Dave Franco.
We are. We are.
He has such range.
Dave Franco is one of the, he's been funny, and he's, funny in 21 Jump Street, but throughout this movie, various moments, I just kind of kept thinking to myself, I really like Dave Franco here. He's just kind of... Yeah. He's kind of coming into his own.
And it's good because, we're getting sick of James Franco. It's kind of like when you're getting tired of Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning came up in the world. And you're all right,
the new models are here.
Yeah, it's just different enough to where it's not...
Car metaphor, nothing else.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just different enough to where it's not it's not Dave Franco doing the same thing he always does. There's a little bit more range than what you're used to seeing.
I couldn't help but wonder at one point, though, because there's at least a five-minute stretch of this film right in the middle where you're this could be interchangeable with that famous James Franco party covered with neon movie, Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
And I was like, just make Dave Franco say, look at all my shit, just once.
Yeah, especially since there's this really weird reference to The Shining during that party.
Yeah.
It was just the quickest clip, and I'm like, did they really just drop a Shining reference? That was bizarre.
They were some genuinely entertaining party scenes.
Yeah.
They found, even though, it's... I mean, yeah, everybody is dumber in their 20s. I mean, you can't help it. You're in your 20s and you're partying and you're
drunk. That's not true.
You're not
in your 20s. It's totally true, Gus.
You asked me to be on this podcast
Early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah, you're old and lame now, like us.
Yeah, exactly. The moment college is over, you're
I have a kid I didn't even know about.
Don't joke. That can happen.
Think how surprised she felt.
Doesn't happen as often to women.
Yeah. she had a kid she didn't know about.
But the kids in here are they keep saying Zac Efron is dumb. I was like, it kind of seems like everybody but Dave Franco and Zac Efron is a blithering idiot.
I love the Robert De Niro party scene where it's there are Leonardo DiCaprio characters in the background, and there's the people saying hoo-ah, which is a Pacino line, and there's the one black guy who's dressed like he's from Jackie Brown, but then quotes Pulp Fiction, and it's just you're doing it wrong.
Which we could be Seth Rogen in that scene, as we're like, no, that's all you, not even not the right even, fucking movie.
Not even the right movie, you idiots. Yeah, that's us.
And even more supporting players that are very enjoyable, Hannibal Buress.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're familiar with his stand-up, it's very much the same kind of dry delivery.
Yeah, I wanted more of him.
Yeah,
Jason
totally.
Mantzoukas, for me, he has one scene, but he had the funniest line in the movie.
Yes, he did. oh my god, Rafi lives!
And speaking of stuff that was in the trailers that they clearly used alternate cuts for the film, I look forward to just watching his deleted scenes.
You know that was he just made that up on the spot.
To show up on set worst things you could think
of. I came with 30 different possible readings here. Let's just go.
On the flip side, Lisa Kudrow got paid. She's alive.
She sure did. She's in the movie, I guess. Two scenes.
Something to do.
Yeah.
That was such a cool, that was an opportunity to get somebody from any iconic old college movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
And she went with Lisa Kudrow. That's fine.
I think most of the people who played the iconic deans are all dead, though.
Yeah.
So, I think that may have been a problem they ran into.
It just feels kind of anticlimactic where for her two scenes, it's just you're the token authority figure. And even you don't really care.
Well, she's not, this isn't one of those, the frats gotta fight versus the system, the dean. The system is the neighbors who the movie wants to cast your sympathies with more.
Yeah.
And, which is not your typical, it's not Animal House.
No.
Mind you, the dean is ineffectual.
There is no system.
And just mechanical, ultimately. It's just when it gets to that point, the dean has to put the thing down, but she doesn't want to. And
yes, Dean Kibosh is my favorite character.
It's not a very interesting character for Lisa Kudrow to play. What are you going to do? But overall, there's lots of good appearances throughout this. Christopher Mintz-Plasse is sitting around going, wasn't I supposed to be a big star by now?
Yeah.
No. And they were like, look, kid, shut up and we'll let you be the character with a big dick. How's that?
I know, that's all they gave him. That was his character. He's the guy with the big dick.
That's what you got. That's take all. It or leave
Every
it.
Every once in a while you can go, ooh-ah!
He was probably going to turn on the movie until they told him that, and he's like, all right.
He'll take a small part if it means a big part. You know?
There you go. Hey, you can't see what I'm doing, but it's very Jackie Gleason.
I wonder for a woman who goes see this film for, like, you know, man joy, watching Zac Efron with his shirt off isn't entirely negated by the Christopher Mintz-Plasse's penis.
I am changing your Twitter handle to Manjoy as soon as this review is over.
Thank God I never gave you my password.
Coming up next on OneOfUs.net, Manjoy Hour with Christopher Lawrence Manjoy.
Woo! This week, like every week, we're talking about Zac Efron's chest.
Things we would draw on Zac Efron. This week,
wait,
the map of the United States.
You gave him a show called Manjoy, and then you changed his last name from Cox to something else?
Come on. I did not think this through.
Zac, draw me like one of your French girls.
Can we put this on the deleted scenes?
Yes, we can. This just cut all this.
There's no way this is getting deleted. This is some quotable shit right here.
Damn it. Yeah.
Which is all that counts so long as you make it to 90 minutes.
Exactly. Boom. We got the formula, guys.
All right, well, let's go to final thoughts here and start with William Goss.
I genuinely enjoyed it. It's as shaggy as you say, but I don't think it overstays its welcome, and I think it finds a good balance between antagonistic behavior and actual protagonists you still kind of sympathize with. And, yeah, it's pretty funny. And so I would give it 8 out of 10 rubbery dildos.
Brian Salisbury.
It's one of those movies, I don't think it struggles to find its footing. I do think it struggles to keep it a little bit. I think, there is a period where some of the same jokes are coming up again and again. And as much as I think Zac Efron does a good job in this movie, the character is written in such a weird way that his compass is kind of all over the place. Like, you know, you're never really sure if he's a complete dick or if he's a moron or if he's actually a good guy. And they just kind of keep switching gears without anything to really prompt it. And I mean, he sells it, but it's just, to me, it was just a weird character thing that I was never really sure. I never could get a beat on the guy, but overall, yeah, I think it's decent. I think it definitely has some laugh out loud moments. I think overall I would give it a 6-pack out of 10.
JC?
With comedies, I place a lot of value in comedies I can watch, over and over again, or at least a few times. And this I enjoyed, I thought it was really funny, but I don't necessarily see myself going back and revisiting this. Like Superbad, I've gone back and watched a few times, and other, you know, some of the other Goldberg Rogan movies. I liked Hannibal Buress. I liked a lot of the bit characters in it. But yeah, I don't think there's enough here to kind of make me love it. But yeah, I would say 6 out of 10 empty kegs.
That's a good party.
Yes, it is.
Although not good enough because there's still 4 left over. What the fuck?
Boom.
Seriously. Your party goers get pussies is all I
have. Give me a straw for those last 4.
You know, Brian and I sitting up like at 8 in the morning going like, all right, man, we're going to kill these last 4 kegs, right?
And then Brian just dies. You kill Brian in the process.
But what a way to go.
What a way to go.
You know, I this took a while to win me over. It really did. I wanted to like it right from the start because I like all the people who are involved with it quite a bit. Even to the 3/4, the beginning of the 3rd act, it was still very hit and miss. It was like, oh, that was genuinely funny. Okay, that was super lame. And it's one of those, let's throw everything we had at the wall and see what sticks. But ultimately, it means it's pretty sloppily written, both in terms of, you know, trying to, like, how realistic do we want to make this? Do we want to make this complete fantasy? Or do we want to make this, oh, this could actually happen? It seems like they couldn't really make up their mind which of those 2 things they wanted. And I felt the same way you did about Zac Efron. It's like, they were trying so hard to make it feel like, oh, we got to give this movie a heart and, like, make it seem like these are actually real people, despite outside of their, you know, the cliches about them. And it just never really quite works. It just feels pretty awkward when they try to do it. But overall, I felt by the end of it, there was more than enough funny stuff where I would actually recommend this to people who enjoy the kind of ribald rated R party films. It's one of the better ones we've seen for the last 2 years or so, I would say. I'm still going to give it 7 out of 10 painfully engorged breasts.
There you go. Yeah, that is a pretty seminal scene right there. And in that I almost made seminal in my pants. But thank God, guys. Thank God that we have left this stupid juvenile, you know, past behind us, and we can move on to being adults. Shots.
I knew you were kidding.
Let's do it.
It's okay.
Come on, round of shots.
Manjoy. The post-credit stinger.